Hello, everybody, and welcome to Listen Money Matters. What's the catchphrase? Oh, that's what it is. Work and get paid. That's simple. And that's from our guest father today, Tom Del Conte. My name is Thomas Frank, and I'm here, as always, with my good friend, Andrew. Andrew, are you drinking anything? Because I'm unfortunately not.
Dude, I am always drinking something. I look forward to picking the beer for the show. This time, it was actually picked by Laura, my wife. It is 2Xmas seasonal. It's from Southern Tier, but the box had like such a cool phrase.
Why didn't you use the box catchphrase?
Ah, shit. You know, I should have. Oh. It, ale brewed in the tradition of Swedish glögg, and it's brewed with figs, orange peels, and spices, and it's good.
That does sound pretty good. I had some of that concentrated coffee, but it's gone now. So now what do? I don't know.
And that this is not your mug that says I'm recording with stupid. So
it says I see dumb people, but no, I'm like, don't use that mug anymore because I kept like having it on podcast and then I couldn't drink from it on the camera, or I had to turn around and like hold it like this. Anywho, I was going to tell you that I'm trying to have like one drink a day, and I want to have it at night. So
only one drink a day, or raise it up to one drink a day.
I want to have one drink a day total. Yeah, I'm just like trying to tweak my personal habits a little bit lately.
If I only had one drink a day, I'm pretty sure I would like shed 30 pounds in a week. People look at me and like, you just look like you're all sugar.
I really hope I don't shed 30 because I would be a rail, but maybe like two or three. Anyway, today on the show, our guest is Natalie Morris, and she is... What should I describe you as? An anchor on MSNBC, and you work for every media outlet known to man as a contributor, basically.
At least it seems worked that way. Yes, on I have done that. My home base is NBC. So,
okay.
Yeah, I have a show on MSNBC. It's called Code Forward. It's a weekly technology show where we do news and interviews about technology, because that's been my career for most of my career is technology reporting. But I'm also a contributor to CNBC, which I've been with CNBC much longer, for three or 4 years now. And recently, I launched a blog on my own site, just nataliemorris.com, and that's where I've been doing personal finance writing, just because it's a passion of mine.
And so we stumbled upon you, we meaning my wife, and then showed me, and then Thomas, and you call yourself the CHO, or Chief Home Officer, which is like super cute. You have this cool logo, but the stuff that you write is awesome. Like, I really resonated with me, and it's like, I mean, the first one that I had read was you wanted to pay your kids for work on the home business and then take what you pay them and put it into an IRA. Where do you come up with this stuff?
Books. I just read copious amounts of personal finance. And then my husband is a podcast junkie. So he does a lot of like smart passive income type blog, you know, podcasts. So he'll come across something and be like, this is what I heard this guy does, research it. So then I go and I had a reader write me. She said, you and your husband are a lot like my husband and I, is that he has a crazy idea. And then I'll go and research the shit out of it. She said, can I say shit? So I was like, yeah, that's kind of my role, is as the chief home officer. You're in charge of all the moving parts. You have to be really educated about all the moving parts. And then you have to know what financial decisions work for you. And a big part of that, I think, is raising your kids with financial literacy as well. So that's why I wrote that blog post.
Okay. And Andrew, you're talking about the should I charge Chewbacca interest on allowance loans one?
I'm talking about a different one, but I really like that one too. And I just want to say, like, a lot of the people who reach out to us, the biggest thing that they were missing is that their parents didn't talk to them about money, didn't teach them the value of money. And I think that's like, I think if there's anything you're doing for your kids, it's probably the biggest thing, because of all skills, like, you need to understand how to use money when you grow up.
Yeah. So there's a great book called The Opposite of Spoiled by Ron Lieber, and he's the New York Times personal finance columnist. And the book came out last February, and I gobbled it up right away. And I think he's so great in his philosophy, because he realizes that here in our Western world, the people who are listening to this podcast probably can relate, we have privilege, we have money. It's not unlimited, but when your kid says, oh, I want this new Millennium Falcon, you can afford it right now, Probably. But you shouldn't just give them everything they want, because then you're making a decision, right? You need some sort of system so that they understand what it costs to get that. Truly, what are the sacrifices? What does money even mean? How do you get to it? And that kind of thing. One of my most popular posts was that I don't think you should pay your kids to do allowance. Pay allowance to do chores, because I think chores, I really don't. I think you should give allowance as a separate lesson. In my house, they are not at all related. You have to do chores, because if you pay them for chores, they can opt out. Be like, I don't want $5 this week. I can't opt out of chores. Chores are because we are a family, and a family is a team, and everyone has to do their stuff. So they have to take care of the communal areas and their own stuff. But if it's something of mine that I want cleaned, like my car or fold the laundry, or they can't do that yet, or, you know, something that, that I'd like them to clean of mine, I will pay them for that as a job, not a chore. It's very different.
Okay.
And so they get allowance every Saturday, and it has nothing to do with their chores. And I don't threaten them for it at all. Even though God knows sometimes I want to. I will not threaten. I give them their allowance in their three jars, and they have a give jar, a save jar, and a spend jar. They understand what each one is for, and then they are expected to do their chores. There's no compensation for that, just like I don't get compensated for doing the chores. If I don't do my chores, the house goes to pot. So they have to participate.
Now, I'm curious, because you have the system going, and it sounds like that, you know, it's working, but there was a time when you started it, and you were like, you have to do chores, and I'm sure at least one was like, well, I don't want to do chores. So how did you, without, like, threatening to not feed them, unless that's what you did, like, how did you kind of...
Well, you know, I tell them, like, you have to take care of your stuff. The stuff that you don't take care of, you don't get to keep. Because if it's just, like, hanging out in the living room and I step on, you know, like a bow and arrow or something, my son has this little archery set and those stupid arrows are everywhere, then you're not taking care of it. Then we should give it to someone who does take care of it. It has nothing to do with money. Like I said, those are different. Those are just different lessons.
So I was interested to kind of compare the way that my parents did allowance with how you do it. And actually, it's exactly the same. We didn't have the jars like you have, but we had to do chores no matter what. And my mom had little books, like every single day there was a page and we had to do all those things after school. And I think I got like $3 a week. Mm-hmm. And it was regardless. It was just like, you get $3 a week, but you're doing your chores no matter what. And then we could opt to do extra chores.
Right.
So I opted to vacuum the house every single morning to get an extra $5 every week.
Yeah, but they also do work for our home business as well, which is a different thing. I do give them extra money for doing the work on behalf of the business. And I just give them little like stamping and scanning, and they like it. They think the scanner and the shredder are the most awesome things ever.
Well, so, shredders are the most awesome thing ever.
You know what? I still like to do the shredder too. So I'm like, all right, I'll let you guys. Oh, you can't. Mommy will do this. It's just so satisfying to see that.
Do you have the stamper that like goes down and goes...
I don't actually. I have just like a rubber.
See that? Those ones are fun too.
Doink, doink, doink.
The click ones are really great though.
Yeah, those are fun. And then they're a little bit less messy as well. But I have a very specific system where I use a neat receipts and I need them to scan those receipts and then shred them. So they do it together. It takes them like 10 minutes, you know. And so I give them $25 a month. And that's taxable income that comes from our business. It's a legitimate administrative job. And they pay taxes on that money instead of our company paying taxes on that money. And then because it's taxable income, they're eligible for an IRA.
Okay, so are you sending your kids to like the library to get the tax forms to do like fill it out themselves and everything?
I'll do it. They're only 3 and 5, so I'll do it. Yeah.
Now, so they're opting to do this additional stuff, but they're 3 and 5, and this is money that's going to the IRA. Like, how do you kind of help them understand that they're getting something or that this is even good?
Well, so I do put the three different jars, spend, save, and give, are three different experiences. So a lot of times on the weekends, I'll say, okay, today is the spend day. So they'll take the money out of their spend jar and we'll just go to Target. And I'm like, you can buy whatever you want. I mean, there's some like no-nos, like I don't want Barbies in my house. So no on the Barbies and like no on the weapons. You know, so far no one's asked for a contraband toy. But you know, like you have to let them buy stupid stuff like, oh, I really need this dinosaur eraser. I'm like, you will never touch that again, but okay, waste your money, because they need to understand that, man, I blew my whole allowance jar on that and I never touch it. So I have to let them make those bad decisions. And then about every 3 months, we take the save jar. And they talk about, Ron Lieber in this book talks about using glass jars and not piggy banks because they need to see it accumulated. Piggy banks, like, it's a bad connotation, like pigs or, you know, muddy, and like it's money is bad. It's just not a good association. Money should have a positive association. Right. So they'll take their save jars and we go to the bank and they each have just a custodial savings account with Bank of America. And I make them like count it out and hand it over and get a deposit slip. It takes forever and people behind you in the bank hate you. But, you know, I just sort of like, we have a good relationship with the banker in our town and they're happy to do it for us. And then, they understand that's going into the bank. They don't understand that I then transfer that into an IRA because that's just too much for them. But eventually they will. Eventually they'll understand that. And we use self-directed IRAs in my house to invest in real estate. So they have self-directed IRAs. So eventually they'll have enough to buy an income-producing property. And then any rent that's made on that property will be taxed tax-free forever. It's so amazing to think of this, that this is just like an awesome way that your kids can build generational wealth. That if you, there's a guy, I wish I remember, he was on one of the podcasts about this because this is what he does. Although this guy, he pays his kids for their likeliness, like for their pictures that he uses in his speaking engagements because he's like, my teenagers won't work, so I just pay them to use their images. And I'm like, that's the wrong list. I did not agree with, but
I'll just go be a model, dad.
Right, like, you use my picture, so pay up. And then those kids own properties. And he said, if you know, if this continues at this rate, it'll be like something like $4.1 million by the time they're in 60s and can withdraw that. It's crazy to think of what you can do with this. So, you know, if you can come up with a legitimate use of income for your kids, or a legitimate income, then there you go. You know, there's a little girl in my kids' preschool who just actually had her picture in a big magazine. I think it was Home and Garden, and she got a real paycheck. So she is eligible for an IRA.
Oh, that's cool.
Because she has to pay taxes on that paycheck. So there are so many ways to give your kids age-appropriate jobs, and you don't have to have a small business to do it. But you think of the potential of doing it. It's so amazing.
So I want
to. I think we need to get Adam Carroll and Natalie.
Oh my God.
Like a battle of who has the most financially savvy kids.
We know this one other guy who also has these awesome ideas with his kids. Like, he played a $10,000 game of Monopoly with real money. Goodness. I mean, they didn't get to keep the winnings, but like the winner got something, and
I think the winner got $20.
But I want to step back a little bit because I think you touch upon like two really awesome things. One, the self-directed IRA. So everyone knows about the tradition, or I think most people listening know about the traditional and the Roth. Why is a self-directed different? And is it like a mountain of paperwork to get this promised land IRA, or is it like as easy?
It's not as easy, but it's not as hard as you think. So the rules for an IRA are that you can use it to invest in anything that does not benefit you right now. So you can invest in art, you can invest in horses even, you can invest in precious metals, and you can invest in real estate. You can't invest in something, like I said, that you take the money from right now. So there's a lot of investors who take advantage of this to buy property inside of their IRA, because once you do that, the rent that you make on that investment property is never taxed, never. Whereas the properties that we own outside of our IRA, we do have to pay tax on those rental incomes. So the rules are that usually there's a fee, a flat fee that you pay. It's around $300 yearly. You can pay out of your own pocket, and then that's another tax deduction, but you don't have to. You can pay that inside of the IRA fund. But anything else that you buy for that investment, whether it's a light bulb, an insurance bill, or a payment to your property manager, everything has to be inside of that IRA. So if I get a tax bill, I have to pay it through the IRA. If I get an electricity bill, I have to pay it out of the IRA. I cannot pay it out of my checking account. So it's a little bit more management, but some of the properties that we've been able to find, for instance, I have one in my IRA now in Reading, Pennsylvania, which is a suburb of Philadelphia. And we found it off market. It was a man who had inherited this house and then wanted to get rid of it because he couldn't pay the taxes on it. And I paid $10,000 for it, plus another like eight. And so it's a
for the full bedroom house, or is that a down payment?
It's a row. I mean, it's in like the city, so they look like row homes. But it makes like $700 a month in income. And that, again, goes straight into my IRA, and that's not taxable money. So imagine that accruing. I'm 37 now, so for another, you know, couple of decades, and then look at all that money I just take out, and then I don't know what I do. I go to Europe or whatever.
Wow. So so can you guys explain this to me? With like a traditional IRA, it's pre-tax money that's going in, but then when you take it out at retirement, your gains are also taxed, right?
Well, yes. I mean, the same rules apply for Roth IRA versus traditional IRA. So our self-directed IRAs are Roths, because I want to put when I contribute money now.
Gotcha.
It is post-tax dollars.
So self-directed, you can choose traditional or Roth, basically.
Yeah. Okay. And some 401k plans allow you to self-direct as well. They're rare, but some of them do it. I know the one my husband has at his job, they don't allow it. But sometimes you can do a self-directed IRA. You also can do self-directed 529s, I believe. So it's not just for IRAs, these self-directed plans, but IRA is really the best one that you can use, or the most common, I guess.
Okay. Oh, that's really interesting. I honestly did not even know you could do... I did not know about the concept of self-directed IRA.
It's my knowledge thus far has been
like Vanguard and...
Yeah, but if you sort of, I mean, you know that these, I've heard many episodes of your shows where you guys talk about all the fees that are inside of your funds. Yeah. You guys know that, right? So for this one, like, there are fees that I have to pay. For instance, if I get a wire of money, the renter or my property manager wants to wire me money, they'll charge me for that. So I'm like, no, just send an actual check, and then that's free. If I want to order documents, like when I close on a house or something, that's like a $50 charge. Like, they sort of nickel and dime you for these administrative stuff, but you can always take the free route as well. But it's just a tiny bit more administrative work on your part. But those are the only, you know, the fees, you know them. They have nothing to do with like what's bought and sold inside a mutual fund. They have nothing to do with anything that you cannot affect. Like every transaction, like, and performance inside of a self-directed fund, you affect it, right? So I don't care what the stock market does, and I do, but in the terms of those investments, because I'm the one in charge, right? I chose that property. I manage that property. I choose the renters. I set the rate. Like, that is my investment from top to bottom.
Okay.
So two questions. One, how many homes do you own, I guess, in your family across the self-directed IRAs?
Investment properties? Nine.
Okay, so you have nine properties. That's a lot. I believe that's a lot. Now, and I'm guessing, and I don't want to know your address, but I'm guessing you live near that house that you bought for $10,000?
No.
So, okay, because my question is, how the fuck do you find a deal like that and don't, like, know the guy personally or are in the area? Do you even see the homes before you buy them? Like,
most of them I've never seen. I think I've only... actually, I don't think I've seen any of them. I'm trying to think if I've seen any of them.
Oh, my God.
Most of them...
What a show-off.
and so I know that that sounds like a dumb investor, right? Reading, Pennsylvania is somewhere we go a lot, actually, because my husband's from there. Mm-hmm. And he...
So he understands the area and he can help advise on, like...
But most of them we find through wholesalers or we find through our own advertisement. So my husband does, there's a great book on how to learn how to do this called Hold. It's just called Hold.
H-O-L-D.
Just Hold. Like, instead of buy and hold or buy and sell or hold, you know, it's like, it's just hold, like hold that investment. Because if you buy real estate for appreciation, you're playing the wrong game. Never play a real estate game for appreciation. You want to buy them and hold them and, you know, add to your net worth. So My husband will do mailings to, he'll like find a list either by calling up a city or buying a list somewhere online of people who have inherited properties and have a good amount of equity in them. And then sometimes it may not be the right thing for them to sell it on the open market, either because they're behind in taxes or because they're out of state or because, I don't know, something's like the house is in terrible condition or what have you, right? Mm. So what we do is we find a really good property manager in the area and we say, you know, we're interested in this one, go check it out. Someone we trust who we have a really good relationship with, and they'll tell us what the house is like, what they think they can rent it for, you know, they can get the contractors in to fix it and that kind of thing. So yeah, a lot of them we find ourselves and a lot of them we'll work through a wholesaler. And wholesaling is something that I only really became interested in, even aware of in the last 2 years. And it's when, again, people find discount real estate that just it wouldn't work for the seller to sell it on the open market. I have a post from November 16th on my blog called How to Find Discount Real Estate Investments. Because, like I said, it's a great way to, like, you help the seller out because they can't use a realtor and pay 5% commission. Mm. And you find the discounts, you know?
Yeah. Hmm. So have you acquired all 9 properties within that 2 years?
No. It's taken us about 3 years to build this. Okay. My husband's, he's got a pretty voracious appetite for real estate. Mm. So he burns through our cash pretty fast. But, you know, these are my dad calls them geese. You know, there's like the geese and the eggs.
Yeah.
When my parents got divorced, my dad liked to say, it's kind of an obnoxious thing to say, but he would be like, yeah, you know, I got all the geese and she got all the eggs. Like, that's how he split up and he was proud of that. But I appreciate at least the philosophy is that, you know, my husband just, he really wants to have as many geese as possible because geese lay eggs for the lifespan. Eggs, okay. You burn through them, you know?
Yeah.
I like that.
So I need to get Anna to just like start researching real estate.
Yeah, so I mean, I have another post up about like forget the nest egg. You need to think about the nest goose, right?
Okay.
And so I explain that philosophy because that's the main philosophy behind Rich Dad Poor Dad is, you know, have income generating investments.
Right.
And yeah, that's. I've been raised with that philosophy my whole life. So when my husband's like, I want to start buying real estate, it didn't freak me out. But I know that a lot of wives would be like, what? You're going to cash out these funds? I don't know. You know, I have the stomach for it because I'm armed with a lot of knowledge and a lot of background and a lot of tools. And so that's why I started this, because I think that there are women like me who need to know what's out there and understand what your options are. Your options are not just a 401k and clench your butt cheeks and hope for the best, right? Like, we have a lot of options, but it's taken
that
years
could have been our catchphrase.
To figure it out. Clench your butt cheeks and hope for the best, right?
Damn it.
Spliced it into the beginning of the episode.
Yeah, yeah.
So, no, but seriously, Andrew, like, I feel like we've had plenty of guests on the show where we've talked about things like real estate and income producing investments, but a lot of what we focused on, I know definitely what like the entirety of my whole investment picture is the traditional, you have a fund, it makes interest off of whatever they do with your fund money, and that's it. So I think it'd be cool to start diving deeper into these options.
You know, I find this fascinating. And you actually make it seem like it's not that much work. I know the setup, and obviously, you know, the purchase is a bear of a task. But once you purchase it, then you have your property manager, and you kind of, and we've done episodes on that where you kind of like put them in place and then you step away and
yeah.
you go do the next
yeah.
one.
It's not that you don't get headaches, right? Like last month, there was one that needed a new driveway, and then this renter moved out, and then another one, like we wanted to put a renter in, but that guy, like, had some kind of sexual offender background, and the property was too close to a school, even though we really wanted to give that guy a chance. Mm. Because you just never know when someone could use a break, and you know, but the parole officer's like, nope, you're too close to a park or something, you know, like those kind of things where you're like, Oh, I don't want to think about that. But since I have property managers, they're kind of like, this is what I think you should do. And then we say yes or no, you know, accordingly. They're the best investment that you could possibly make. And for most of our properties, they're tax deductible. They're not inside the self-directed IRAs.
It makes sense, because then you focus your time on what you're really good at, which is getting more properties, optimizing your thing, and you let them do what they're good at.
Right.
Yeah, and we talked
to... And I'm really good at organization. You know, that's sort of like, you know, you're looking at me now in my home office.
I was
going to
say, your house doesn't look that...
I understand that. But
organization
I'm
joking. Process, Andrew.
Wait, what?
Yeah. Organization is a process.
That's right.
Sometimes there's
you
messy
catch
bits.
Me in the middle of Christmas and that is not organized. But I'm good at like keeping everything for each property in a certain way and documenting like which expenses go to which thing, and I love that kind of stuff. And I really have learned about how to maximize our tax strategy. Really great book called Tax Free Wealth by Tom Wheelwright. You should have that guy on the show. He's amazing.
That may just happen.
Yeah, reach out
that
to him.
That piqued my interest because last night we're like, Anna and I are going to move at some point here. And I'm like, okay, how much can I afford for rent? And so I still have a shaky grasp on how much I have to pay for taxes as a self-employed person. But I think I got the number right yesterday. And I was just like, that's like a lot of my income. It's like
two books that you have to read. One, Tax-Free Wealth, and the other one, Profit First. On how, as a self-employed person, you can just make sure that all of that stuff is automated and you don't have to freak out. Because I've always been like that, too. Like, I just don't have a sense of how much I'm going to be charged in taxes. Mm-hmm. But when you read these two books in conjunction, you'll have a much better grasp on how to manage it, how to put it away, and then how to, like, pay as little as possible. Because I have an account for my taxes, and every time we make money, I chop off 15%, put it away so that I can't see it. But I think that I have enough expenses based on the Tax-Free Wealth book that we won't have to pay a straight 15%, but I'm ready to.
So,
Natalie, you only put 15% in there?
I do. I put 15% every time I get paid into an account that I cannot touch.
Yeah, I have, because I've got the same thing, but I put like 45%.
But see, you shouldn't have to if you're maximizing your deductions.
Yeah, I'm probably doing something wrong with my taxes then.
Look, you have me so excited. We have a book club in our community, and I'm going to make sure that this is like the next book, because like, damn, I pay a lot in taxes. I'm sure you do as well, Thomas.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
But so here's the thing. So I was going through your blog, and you have a post on something that I personally did not believe was controversial. And we did an episode on it, and it turned out to be extremely controversial. And I think it's because maybe people don't understand or get it. But your post is called How to Borrow from Your 401k to Invest in Real Estate.
I heard your episode about this.
And so first of all, I want to hear your feedback, but I've done this two times. It has like rocketed my wealth forward. I've been able to, it cost me negligible amounts of money in terms of, I don't know, like lost gains or whatever. I pay it back like almost immediately. So I want to hear your thoughts on what maybe we did wrong on the episode, and why you... This is even a post. I mean...
Okay. I had a few thoughts. I'm trying to remember some of the things that you guys said. Like, I hadn't considered it as a way to, like, pay down debt, but it does make sense if you kind of weigh the interest that you're paying, you know, over time. There was a few things... I just can't remember the details of...
I want you to lay it on us, Natalie. I want you to like shoot us down and tell us how dumb we are. Like,
no. I mean, I was so glad that you did this because we had done it a few times. I think that, you know, some of the things that people had said to me on this post were that, A, you don't want to pay taxes twice, because if it's not a Roth 401k, then you're putting in you're putting in pre-tax money, but then you'll be taxed on it when you withdraw, right? So let me see.
I think there's a structure that protects against it. Because like when the episode came out and we got all the feedback, I went and did like a crazy amount of research. I knew nothing about the strategy when we did the episode. And I think the double taxation thing is not...
Yeah, I get. I'm sorry, I don't remember the particulars of that, but two people had written me about that. And then, but again, if you have a Roth, it doesn't matter. You've already paid money taxes on that, and you won't pay it again when you take that money out. So you know, a Roth 401k is, I think, just as great as the Roth IRA. I think Roth is such a great tax law written for us.
That's just another thing that I would love to go deep on, because people argue like, no Roth. It doesn't. I'm like, that makes so much sense. I guess, but you have to maybe
be a
business
owner.
I have
a post up about that too. Yeah. Well, because if you don't have a Roth, then what you're saying is that you think that you'll retire in a lower income bracket than you are now.
I think that's crazy. Yeah. If you think
that you're gonna want that, like, I think I'm going to be worth a lot
Yeah. And you know what? Like, you should be crazed and concerned if you're retiring in like some low income level, and then there's some like awesome medical whatever, and you get to live to 150, but you can really only pay to 80 or something.
So the statistics about this are really crazy. Like, most the average withdrawal at full maturity of a 401k is like around $100,000. That's not a ton of money to live another 20 years on. Yeah. Plus, if it's a 401k, it will be taxed. So here's your $100,000, plus I'm going to tax it at, 15% capital gains? So here's $85,000.
And you know, most people are withdrawing it at one time. So they're right. getting $100,000 in income in 1 year. Yeah.
And then that's it? That's all you've got to live off of? And it just seems so unlikely. I mean, I don't know where you're going to live off of. You say you want to live 20 years on $85,000. I just, not in this country, you're not going to. So, you know, your 401k is an awesome tool, but it's only one of many tools you should be using. And so there's no reason that you shouldn't at least consider using it to make other investments. And so if you have a big chunk of change in there, you can use it for another investment that is going to perform. It just depends which one you think is going to perform better. I know that these rental properties that we've purchased are performing at a really high level.
I need you to tell me, Natalie, like, why pulling it from your 401k made sense for you guys. Because, I mean, there are many levers that you could pull to get the X dollars you need for your place. I mean, I thought it was good in my situation, and it was an easy yes for me. But like, I think at this point in the episode, people have a lot of respect for you. You have like 9 properties. You've done very well for yourself. You're teaching your kids like good money things. Like, as someone who's made a lot of good decisions, why did you think this was a good decision as opposed to the other ways that you could have gotten the money?
No, we were out of money because my husband had bought 9 properties. So that's why, you know, we didn't have it anywhere else. And he would, you know, he comes across these properties and he's like, I can't say no to it. And then, of course, you know, it's sort of very typical where he's the gas and I'm the brakes. And I'm like, we can't afford that one. And then he's like, but look, I can, you know, I'm like, we have enough right now. But when you see a good deal and you know the economy is at a good place and you know that that would be a good investment, but you can't otherwise find the cash, right? Nothing else was liquid. Then he said, I really want to do this. And when I started to research the rules on it, you know, the most awesome thing that you made this point in the podcast was that the interest that you pay back goes to you, that you're paying that interest into your own account. And that is above and beyond the minimum contribution that you're allowed to make, which I think is 16.5, right? Is that what you're saying?
Yeah.
So, you know, you could have already maxed out your contribution, but then you're making a little extra because you're paying yourself back the interest.
I like that. I mean, I'm a fan anyways. So.
And I think a lot of people, you know, I found a study that said something like 20% of people with a 401k have a loan out to themselves at any given time. So yeah. It's not uncommon, but we've sort of conceptualized the 401k as this holy grail. And it's not, again, it's a really great investment tool, but you have to make sure that, you know, your company just doesn't funnel your money into a high fee account, because a lot of times that happens. There's a great website called Feeks, F-E-E-X.
Oh, Feeks. We had the CEO on. Yeah. Yes.
Oh, okay. Yeah. Fantastic. I guess I was saying it wrong. I'd never heard it said out loud.
I don't know how you pronounce it. That's just in my own, no one said the word to me. You know.
Right. So, you know, you have to make sure you're not paying high funds in there. But again, 401k is only one tool on your tool belt.
Yeah, this is where I run into like these conflicting ideologies with talking about it. Because certainly the way you guys utilize it is excellent. And I went and wrote, I read like two studies on the statistics on how many people have a 401k loan outstanding, what that, like the correlation of that to their income level and how much cash they have on hand, like they're basically their net worth and the delinquency rates. And it basically comes down to, it's likely that people who take out a loan like this will use it for bad things, but it's a tool that's useful if you do it right. So it's like, do we sit here on the podcast being like, yes, you can use it in the correct ways, therefore we can advocate it, you know, or do we take the stance of like that, an organization being like, we have really the guide to behavior? Thing
that I like really struggle with a lot, especially when people like have issues with things like this. It's, I feel, first of all, we're not financial advisors. We never tell people like they should do this because we're not blah 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 CFP and all that good stuff.
But we're chief home officers. We're people who are trying to make the best decisions we can for ourselves.
Yeah, mm-hmm. And I think like it's our job to maybe lay out the education and convey the options, and you know, the adult decision part goes on to you. Like, these are all levers you could pull, ways that you can, you know, amp your net worth or obviously drag it down, but you have to kind of step up and not buy the plasma screen television for $8,000 and instead buy a rental property.
Yeah.
Well, you and should my not husband, buy a plasma TV anyway.
That's right. LCD.
Super old. Yeah.
I know, I haven't heard that in a while. But, you know, someone wrote on my blog, or no, on my Facebook page, they're like, well, if you use this to pay down debt, you haven't taught yourself to stop accruing debt. And I understand the behavioral argument of that. But again, it depends on how much stress that debt is really costing you as well. Because, you know, debt, if it's really choking you, is not just like bad for your credit score, right? It's bad for your bodily health. That stress creates inflammation in your body, creates like, this is how we become unhealthy, right? So yes, you shouldn't use your savings to pay down your credit card debt unless you think this is something that's choking you and debilitating you from really growing financially. Mm-hmm. Get rid of it and never do it again, right? Mm. You can cut those cards out and then I hate to see that money is really something that hurts people, you know. It just shouldn't be that way.
And a lot of people talk about money, that it's always sequestered in the language of math and what's the optimally best thing, but we're not computers shuffling little numbers around. Like, it's connected, like you said, to stress levels, to everything. Like, it represents your standing in life to some degree, and that's going to cause stress. And if it's significant for certain people, then there's a different decision to be made.
Yeah, yeah. That's one of the reasons I like Susie Orman a lot. I've read most of her books, and I think she's wonderful. But a lot of times, she doesn't sort of account for these moving parts. You know, she's kind of like, just work off your debt little by little. Or, you know, I don't think there's not a one formula. There's mm-hmm. just a lot of information. You need to understand it, and then you need to behave on, you know, make decisions based on your family.
Mm. Yeah.
Now, when you talk to your audience, or you just talk about money in general, do you feel that you need to put on baby gloves when you kind of convey things? I mean, because look, it's like once you say, hey, you could tap 50% of the value of your 401k to invest in property, go to Disneyland, buy drugs, you know, do you feel that you have to maybe baby them in this, or like, should we be?
Well, no. I mean, I don't want anyone to make the decisions that I'm making. I want them to understand what I have found, because it took me so many years to understand all of these awesome tricks, like borrowing from your 401k or opening a self-directed IRA or opening one for your kids, or all of these things have been based on me and a library card, really. Like, I go to the library and I read everything that I can find. And then I'm like, wow, I didn't know you could do this. I didn't know this was an option. I didn't know, you know. So I'm finding things that if it took me this long to learn, and I work at CNBC, right? Then surely a lot of people don't know this either. I just want them to understand it. I'm not telling you to do anything. I'm telling you to understand it and then do what's best for you.
Yeah.
So
speaking of libraries, I feel like I have what, three new books to read now?
I know. Like, I know as soon as we finish recording this episode, I'm gonna be like, get those book names down. Get them into the library.
Actually, can we kind of recap them just in case people forgot them? I know one we mentioned was Hold, right?
Hold is how to find off-market properties and how to manage your own real estate investments. It's a very good starter book.
Okay. You had one on tax efficient.
Tax-free wealth, I think, is the one where you should start. Okay. Because that book really opened my mind to how the government writes tax laws. He makes the point that he thinks that most tax attorneys really only, or not even tax attorneys, but tax preparers, only know like the first one or two pages of the tax law. They just
bring you to the starting line, I feel like.
Right.
And I want someone who's going to really get in there and find me.
So the guy who wrote this is Robert Kiyosaki's tax accountant.
Oh, there you
go. And so this is the guy. He says, you know, he says, I'm a tax nerd. Like, I love it. I read the code. I want to use it to the best of my advantage. He said, what most people don't realize is that the tax code is written to encourage entrepreneurship. Mm. And so if you have a real business that is growing the economy, there are a lot of perks for that. And so that's why, you know, entrepreneurs just don't understand how to take full advantage of that. So he gives a lot of really concrete ways. I have a blog post about how we do it, about how to, let me see if I can find it, about how to save money by incorporating your family. I think that's sort of...
So I kind of like almost, step. I'm like, oh my God, I have the best segue to the next piece, because I'm looking at one of your posts. And this is something that Laura and I do, and I think that people maybe don't get that like having a family LLC thing, because how to write off your date nights on your taxes. And this is something that Laura and I just started doing, and all of a sudden we started saving like a ridiculous amount of money. Can you like kind of tell us a little bit?
Well, the main point, and I don't want to spoil the book, but because he'll give you much better. No, this is all from Tax-Free Wealth.
Oh, shit. Mm. Okay.
Like, he talks about writing off your vacations, writing off your date nights, writing off your, because there's so many expenses if you have a small business that you pay for out of your own pocket because it's the way you're running your household, that should be a taxable expense that you should be paying inside your business account. For instance, the broadband in your house. Mm. Do you pay that out of your checking account or out of your LLC?
Money Matters pays for our internet.
Okay. Well, then.
Yeah. I mean, but I think I'm totally on board with you in
your,
the mindset.
Your gas bill, your cell phone bill, your date nights. If you have a family business, my husband and I do legitimately go to lunch or dinner to talk about these things, because then we don't have our kids running around. That's a business expense. You do have to prove that not every outing is a business expense if you are ever
audited or
something like that. And you have to keep really good records. Like I said, I use a Neat scanner, and I use that software. But there are so many things that you can be using. And for instance, I'm an on-air broadcaster, so like my haircuts, my makeup, you know, those are taxable.
So did you write off?
So when I buy geeky t-shirts that people like in my videos, that's a business expense.
You know, okay, so those are things I think so, and I think you can make the argument for them. I've had accountants push back, and maybe some people will write me and be like, you can't do that. and it really depends, right? Like, the foundation I wear, like, I don't otherwise wear makeup like this unless I'm on the air. Mm. And so that is something that I use because I am a TV host, right? That's a taxable expense, right? I have had accountants make the argument that my husband and I, because we're both news anchors.
He's a news anchor too.
He is, yeah.
Okay. So we got like two celebrities in one household.
He anchors Fox and Friends.
Oh, wow. Yeah. No shit. He's on Fox and Friends?
Yeah.
So I could probably deduce who he is, because there's only like three guys, right?
Oh.
There's
two. Does he work in the huge Fox building?
Uh-huh.
I've been in the Fox and Friends waiting room.
That's right.
Oh, yeah. So was key. So you were with me.
I think I took a picture of you in front of the Fox and Friends poster. So
that's right.
Her husband may be looking at you while you're
No, the poster is the weekday crew. He's the weekend guy.
Oh, okay.
Okay.
Yeah. But nevertheless, yeah. So what point was I making was that some accountants have said that our gym bill, Is a business expense because we have to look a certain way, and you know, I'm not completely sure about that. You'd have to talk to your own attorney. But
Thomas is like my gym bill.
Yeah, but the point is that you can make legitimate arguments for a lot of your household expenses to be deductions, now, and that's how you
save. Here's the thing, Natalie. Like, I'm totally with you, and this sounds awesome. But like, why would anyone ever care to deduct these date night on your company, date night on you? Like, why does it even make a difference?
Okay, here's why. If me, Natalie Morris, the lady, gets a $1,000 check written to me, not Natalie Morris LLC, which exists, but just to regular plain old lady Natalie Morris, then I get taxed on $1,000 no matter what it cost me to make that $1,000. So say I did a $1,000 speaking engagement, but it cost me $500 to travel there. I still get taxed on $1,000. But if I am Natalie Morris LLC, the corporation who is growing the economy and working and, you know, taking advantage of the tax laws that are written for businesses, and I make $1,000 on a speaking engagement, but it cost me $500 to get there, I get taxed on $500. I don't get taxed on $1,000. So you want to make the point that no matter what you made, it cost you a lot to make that. So you pay tax on what's left over, not the whole sum. So that's why you need all of these. I'm going to link you to that. That's why you need all of these expenses.
And
so I had an epiphany. You might have heard some clicking earlier.
Okay, click that link, that blog post that I wrote called How to Save Money on Taxes by Incorporating Your Family. You see the graphic that I made there?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I'm not an awesome graphic designer, but that sort of explains.
Oh, that's good.
So for the people who are listening, the graphic basically illustrates what Natalie just described. I would say four easy boxes, but there's like a split because it's individuals, corporations. So it's four on the left, four on the right. And it basically just shows that you would pay less, like half in taxes for something you were going to do anyways.
Yeah. Yeah. So that's why you need those expenses. But again, he shows you how to do it legitimately. This is not how to get around the government's laws. Mm. It's how to actually use them. Because if you were to just incorporate and then your incorporation is making a loss every year and it's not a business you take seriously, you're just doing it for taxation purposes, the government will know that and they will penalize you heavily. So this is how to actually use the laws legitimately, not eye-wink the IRS and get around it.
And just to say, like, tax evasion is illegal, but tax avoidance is encouraged. I mean, they want you to take advantage of all of these things.
Yeah, they do.
You know, to stimulate the economy, whatever. But here's the thing, Natalie, is you have Natalie Morris LLC, and it sounds like you contract to CNBC and all these places, and they pay your LLC. And I have Listen Money Matters LLC, and all the Listen Money Matters income comes into the LLC. That's wonderful. But there are people listening. They don't have this like opportunity to contract. They're an employee. They don't have an online business. Can they create their own family LLC? Like, I don't know. Tell me.
Yeah. So if you are just a straight paycheck family, we both go off to our separate jobs. We come home. We do no work after that. No. The tax laws were not written for employees. And it sounds harsh, but it's true. And I didn't write that. But a lot of people have written me and said, oh, I am a freelance artist, or I am a freelance graphic designer, or I also do these things, or, you know, you mow the neighborhood lawns. Like, there are plenty of ways to incorporate legitimate businesses, legitimate small businesses. You sell jewelry on Etsy, right? Mm. But yes, you have to be creative about being a legitimate business.
So you have to attempt to do something, right? Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, I was going to say earlier, you probably heard some clicking. When you guys said like you don't pay for your company pays for your internet, right? Mm-hmm. Well, I've always been like, well, I split my internet with my roommate, so that's hard to do. But then I just realized, like, I'm the one who manages all the money in the house, so I can just, the money they pay me for their share, I can just record that as business income, and then I can expense the entire broadband bill or something like that.
Yeah. You just need the receipt, right? Like, if they pay you, well, let's see. If they pay you half of it, then, yeah, they're renting your half of the broadband.
They're renting four-fifths of it.
Okay.
Then I have five people in the house.
Right.
It can still run through your entity, right? Your entity would be the one that has the internet. They pay you back, so then you would only really deduct 1/4 of it on your business, right? Or whatever fraction you are.
Well, yeah, okay, true. But let's say it's a $100 internet bill, so you're each paying $20, right? Yeah. I'm sure you could find other expenses to go against that $80, right? Like, you're not really going to pay taxes on $80. You're going to maybe have a different expense. Like, you know, I don't know. I mean, okay,
what about
I don't.
The Apple Watch you're wearing, Thomas. I noticed that's a new thing.
Did you
both of you have Apple Watches. Wait. Now I'm starting to feel jealous.
But mine's a tester.
I'm surprised you don't have one. I was going to say, like, when we started, oh, you do technology podcasts? Let's talk about the Apple Watch because I just got one.
Huh? I'll draw you a little.
I haven't done the drawing thing yet. I need to do that. I haven't figured out how to do it.
Yeah, you have to have someone else who has an Apple Watch. So
I've just been obsessed with the little activity rings.
Yeah, it's fun.
It's been making me
but
run.
But that is a legitimate business expense. There's no.
Oh, this one definitely got expensed. I'm like, I bought this for two-factor auth stuff. I bought it for just business.
Yeah, no, the IRS will never question you on that kind of thing. That's just not the kind of thing they'll go after. What they'll really go after is like, oh, this Amazon bill, what was on it? You know, or that kind of stuff that, you know. So.
Yeah, whenever I get stuff from Amazon, I always try to write what I got in my books, not just Amazon purchase.
Right. I want to make it clear. I am not a tax accountant. I'm just someone.
Yeah.
I'm not really saying you could write off your gym bill. I don't know. Everyone's different. But if you read this book, you'll really realize that, you know, like I said in this post, I used to think that it was just kind of like tax time was a time to bend over and that was it, you know, and that's not true.
Yeah. I love the intro. It's like, where is it? In 2013, you had like a $40,000 tax bill. I nearly went into labor and I wasn't pregnant. But that's like how I feel. It wasn't 40,000, but like it's probably going to be coming up on that this year. But I need to figure out like what have I not been expensing that I need to be expensing.
Yeah.
Internet is definitely one of them.
This is not the only strategy, but it's definitely worth reading the book just for that. And he also talks about other investments that are really awesome that you can make in order to save taxes. For instance, he talks about investing in local farms, which I have not researched very much. I thought about it. But there are a lot of tax breaks for investing in sort of local farms. And if that's something you're passionate about, like local organic food, look into it. You know, why not?
So, okay, one more thing.
That part is a little bit complicated, but
I need to get like one more thing at least from your brain. I have so we're like obsessed with Mint because, you know, it pulls in all your expenses, like automates your budget thing, and it's like great, right? Just kind of does it. This whole business thing and writing off expenses, and you know, if you were just gonna buy something from eBay and sell it on Amazon, you have a business. But once you start writing off all these expenses and with receipts, it gets really complicated. What do you use? Like, I'm going to say that you probably are not doing it all by hand. Like, are you like a QuickBooks disciple? Are you like a FreshBooks disciple? What do you use for your receipts? Like, how can someone take this episode, put it into some piece of software, and basically make it easy?
Well, I'm kind of a spreadsheet junkie, and every time I write a post about something that I do, I offer people the chance to get that spreadsheet. You just sort of join my mailing list, and then I have it, you know? I'm totally okay with that. I like to share it, but every task has its own unique needs, and so I use a Neat receipt. And as far as like
NEAT.com?
Yeah, just go to neat.com because they've got a great scanner for financial management. And then, oh, sorry, my daughter just woke up. She's crying. And then the book, I'm going to tell you one more time, was Profit First. So in order to like figure out where all your money is going for, it's a lot like about paying yourself as an entrepreneur first. So that's also really important.
Natalie. Thank you so much for coming on the show. It was a super enlightening episode. I hope people go and visit your blog because it's really awesome.
Thank you. I was so excited to be invited on your show because I think you guys do a really good job of just trying to figure out what the tools are in the finance world. And, you know, I really love your approach to it. It's very much like, I'm not an expert, but I'm going to keep trying to figure out what the tools are. And it's awesome. You guys are really great.
Thank you. Everyone should go check out Natalie's site. We don't recommend sites much, but it is super awesome.
All right, we got to plug the community before we.
Yeah, so we did. I guess maybe I don't know. It's like 2 weeks ago. We've released two new podcasts because we know you guys love podcasts and we can't stop talking. So we have Rich Tips, which I will be talking with Natalie after this, hopefully, to record. Like her favorite books, the tools she uses, and kind of like get deep into the tools and ask anything, which is Laura, my wife, and I. And we answer your questions, really interesting questions we found on Quora and stuff like that. And we just have like a ton of stuff in there and we're all talking and helping each other. I think you'll really like it. I really like it.
I was pretty happy with, I had a question about loans and put it right in the community and a bunch of people got back to me.
I know, it's like nice everyone's fighting to, yeah, I mean, a lot of the people you've heard on the show are in the community, like Eric, his name's Econ Eric, he's done two episodes with us, he's awesome, he's in there, come join us.
So yeah, listenmoneymatters.com/join. Mm. And you made the page all fancy now. So.
Now it has like a picture on it, and words.
Cool. So, guys, thanks so much for listening, and we will see you in next week's episode. Later, guys.
Later, man.
Please tell your friends about this show.